Heyo, welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on them Twitter streets. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you? And get our minds off basketball, please, will you?
Hey, Mike, it's good to talk to you. I was going to say, it's a basketball conference now, right? I mean, I know Florida lost, but shout out to Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, all the SEC teams that won this weekend. I know the Big Ten's got more teams in the Sweet 16, but Mike's bracket of all SEC Final Four or Elite Eight is still somewhere out there, right?
It is. I had Florida winning the whole dang thing, so that went up in smoke. I don't know if we're going to see liquid flames in the comments here. He's probably on a couple days hiatus after that collapse last night against who was it? Freaking Iowa. Can't lose to Iowa at anything unless it's a Music City Bowl, and even then, it's disgraceful.
See, the thing with the bowl games in Iowa is usually the SEC teams are shorthanded. They really don't care, even though Big Ten fans try to insist that these games actually matter. They don't. So, but this time in the NCAA tournament, it's hard to make that argument, Mike. But the good news is, the basketball went relatively well, all things considered. We got spring practice, so I guess the Big Ten's got the college football national title, but maybe one of these SEC teams will catch up, including Florida, like the John Sumrall hire.
Right. And if they're going to get there, Stephen, they're going to need some help from some breakout players. So that's what we're discussing on tonight's episode. Stephen and I, game plan, we thought, hey, Sweet 16, how about the Sweet 16 players on the rise, breakout players, however you want to say it, in the Southeastern Conference. So we've got a selection for every single team in the SEC this spring. So that's going to be the main talking points of the program. But before we get into that, wanted to get some thoughts and reactions from Stephen on some of the news. There's not been a lot of news, but there has been some. And most notably, the NCAA has announced that they are going to change or at least amend the targeting rule. This is a one-year trial period, and it already seems better than what they already had. So hopefully this sticks. But so for anybody that's missed it, the NCAA has announced that if a player gets called for targeting for the first time in the season, he will not miss any of the next game. So that's already better in my opinion, because targeting is so subjective. It happens so quickly in a blink of an eye. You could be trying to tackle someone and then they lower their head. All of a sudden it's a targeting, right? Why should we penalize you for the next game? We shouldn't. That's ridiculous. So the NCAA wisely, we will no longer penalize someone the following game for having a single targeting call. Now, if the same player gets called for two, his second targeting of the season, he's got to sit out the first half of the next game. So it's kind of like the old rule. If you get called for it twice in a season, you will miss the first half of the following game. And then thirdly, if you get called for your third targeting of the season, you miss the entire next game, which apparently no individual got called for targeting three separate occasions last season. So they're including that in there, but it's not yet happened, at least not last season. So I say all that, Stephen, to throw it to you. What's your thoughts? Did the NCAA, they finally get something right?
I was going to say, Mike, did you look outside and make sure the world wasn't falling in our houses and pigs weren't flying, that the NCAA actually made a good decision? Because I think this is actually a step forward. If you look at targeting and some of the statistics around it, it is changing sort of the behavior. And I think anything that keeps players healthy and on the field and sort of minimizes, maybe long-term concerns is good for the game. We want star players to be out there. That's a step in the right direction. So it has changed the behavior of a lot of these things. And also, this is also a step in the right direction too, because that was kind of weird that somebody could have a targeting penalty at the end of 1 year and then sit out the opener of the next season. Seems kind of weird. And I think given that the repeat offenders have been pretty small, like you said, with the suspension the third time, I think that this is just a step in the right direction to give a little bit more leeway, given the subjectivity of this rule, and also not hurting for that kind of weird setup of somebody could be out one half and then be out the half of another game, 1 week to the next or one season to the next. So I think surprisingly, Mike, I think the NCAA actually made a really smart decision. You keep kind of the basics intact and improve some of the other things around it, around targeting.
Yeah. I guess, what do they say, Stephen? A broken clock's right twice a day. So credit the NCAA. I like the fact that they're being a little bit proactive and hopefully fixing one of the worst aspects of our great sport, the targeting. But to your point, it you know, we don't have remember ESPN used to run jacked up. They would just show these, like, and I'm sure every time was like a horrible concussion in the years to come. So that should not be celebrated these days. But hey, our games come a long time where literally ESPN used to highlight those plays. Now they're being taken out of the game for player safety, which is a good thing. So there has been good with the targeting, but it's gotten a little crazy with the targeting rules, and I'm just happy they're kind of amending it.
I am too. I don't know if you feel this way, but I've always felt when I'm watching a game, it's like sometimes, and knowing the targeting rules and reading them before the season and watching the videos, and you see one and you're like, that is an obvious targeting. And they come back and say there's no targeting. So the subjectivity of it, you know, in general, I think the idea is good to try to minimize those big collisions that are going to keep guys off the field for multiple weeks or hurt a star player. That's all great. The subjectivity of the rule has been a problem. And so I think this is a step in the right direction of just kind of improving it at the margins, but still keeping the basics of it in there. So that way, like you said, the ESPN highlights. I mean, I remember as a kid, like, what there'd be like 30-minute shows of all the big hits in the NFL that year. Don't see that too many more times. This kind of behavior has changed as a result of this rule.
No, you do not. But hey, you know what I do see, Stephen, is shout out our great cousin Glenn Warsaw. He's re-upped his membership and he's gifted one. So we appreciate you, Glenn, and he's a big Sooner. So let's switch gears to there was news here, Stephen, today that Owen Heineke, their outstanding linebacker, who he's kind of been moving towards a career in the NFL. He's done the pro day and all that. He has been trying to gain an extra year of eligibility. The NCAA said, no, you cannot. And we had George Stoya on several weeks ago. Anybody that missed it, go check that out if you want kind of the full analysis of why Heineke thinks he should be given another year. But just simply, he played lacrosse, I believe it was, at Ohio State, and he barely played. And the NCAA is counting that as one of his years. I don't know. They must not have red shirts in lacrosse. I don't know. But be it as it may. So he's out of eligibility, according to the NCAA. But he's pulling an old Trinidad, is my understanding, to where he wants an injunction so that he can play this upcoming season. Steven, now we clearly do not know at this point in time if he will be eligible. We don't know how that's going to play out. This may be another court case, and I'm sure they'll hold it in Norman, Oklahoma, if it does, to get a friendly judge here. But just what could it mean for Oklahoma to get Owen Heineke if he is indeed eligible next season for the Sooners?
Mike, it would be huge. I mean, I've got Oklahoma for 5 returning starters. Of course, Kip Lewis is back on the second level. So, you know, they've already got a pretty good foundation. And I think just adding what would be another key piece to this defense, a defense that was one of the best in the SEC, would be significant. Heineke was, what, second on the team in tackles last season. Just kind of like, if you're adding another stand out to your front 7, you got some turnover up front, but your second level's really strong. I mean, that's only great news for Brent Venables as he looks to find the next answers on this defense. So obviously a lot of unknown, because it feels like we just need a wheel. We can spin it, the eligible knot, because I thought Joey Aguilar was going to get that extra year. He didn't. Of course, Trinidad was able to. That's the hard part in all this, but I think the takeaway is, like, if he gets it, he's another key piece of what should be a very good Oklahoma defense in 2026.
Yeah, I mean, this will be pretty interesting, won't it? So I don't know how quickly this will get resolved, but, you know, NFL teams probably need to know as well. Now again, maybe he's just pulling himself out of the draft. I don't know, but it's going to be something to see where I would think Oklahoma – I don't know what happens there. Has that ever happened, Stephen, where a guy gets drafted and he come back and play college football? Not to my knowledge.
Certainly not any time in recent memory, Mike. I mean, I think you're right in just, you know, kind of having one of those moments of like, oh yeah, the draft is basically 1 month away at this point. So there is a need for kind of speed here and kind of figuring out where this ruling is going to go. So, Mike, we've got a few court cases in college football. They're still pending. Chandler Morris up at Virginia. We've got this one. I think there might be one other one floating out there. So here we are on court TV watch trying to figure out what the next steps are going to be for some of these teams.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Stephen, because due to a court ruling, Austin Simmons had to transfer. He didn't have to, but he wanted to play. See what I did there? So that Missouri has officially named Austin Simmons a starting quarterback exiting spring there in Columbia. Stephen, we haven't had you on since this news broke. What's your thoughts on Missouri already naming starting quarterback Austin Simmons, the transfer from Ole Miss?
Mike, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I think quarterback battle here at Missouri was kind of a quarterback battle in name only, right? You know, as much as Zollers and Simmons, as much as we could play it up, you don't go out and spend the resources and the time to get Austin Simmons if he's not going to be your starter. That being said, I actually think this is good news for Missouri. So that basically you bring your guy in, he wins the job convincingly. There's no questions in the spring. He's clearly the starter. The fact that he came in, was able to do that, and now he's got complete grasp of the offense after a spring, I think you feel pretty good about everything that's transpired. I think the next part of that is, and I think this is key for where Missouri goes this year, is can they help him reach his potential? Because I think that's the biggest question, because I don't think, you know, I went back last week after this announcement, I watched the Austin Simmons from earlier this year in 2025 and watched the game against Georgia. And you see the arm talent, you see the touch, you see the arm strength, you see everything that you want to see. And you see all that and go, okay, can he put it together over the course of a full season? And if he can, with that run game, with the track record that Missouri has of finding the right pieces in the portal, they could easily exceed expectations. So I think great news that he came in, seized the job, no questions at all about Zollers pushing him now. He's the starter. He's QB1. You can build on that this summer in the fall. I'm curious to see if they can help him reach his potential, because there's a lot of talent in Austin Simmons.
Yeah, and I wonder if this does anything for the new offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey. Already knows who it's going to be. You know, that's, I would imagine, it's not like he's going to ignore the other quarterbacks or anything, but it's a little different with a left-handed quarterback. Now, you know, you've got that resolved, putting in a new system. Although I'm sure it's not going to be completely new by any means, but with change this offseason, I think the sooner you could get this done, the better for Missouri. And I've said it, Stephen, that I think Missouri could have a top five offense in the SEC next season. And this is kind of giving me confidence that they can actually reach that lofty expectation instead of maybe, you know, going into training camp, be like, oh, Austin Simmons, I don't know if he's going to do it. You know what I mean? So I think this was great news.
I think you'd be worried if you're Missouri, if Austin Simmons came in and didn't win the starting job. Like, in a way, you could argue, okay, if Zollers just outplayed expectations and he was great and they actually had a quarterback battle, I'd be concerned if he came in, didn't really impress. This being Simmons, he kind of struggled. The job was open into fall practice. But just the fact that he's played so well enough at this point, I mean, they started spring practice in February. Now they've won the job, but, you know, less than a month later, I think is a good sign. And now you know who your QB1 is. You can kind of build the offense around him. You can spend all summer getting him ready. You're not having to say, well, if he's the starter, we got to do this and this. Like, you know your guy, and you can kind of build from there. Also, I think as kind of skeptical as I am about the upside of Chip Lindsey's offense, I do like the fact that he's worked with guys like Drake May. He's worked with Bryce Underwood. He's worked with different type of quarterbacks. And Eli Drinkwitz has had a lot of success with, you know, a lot of different quarterbacks too. So kind of, I guess, mixing styles, mixing schemes, maybe knowing also who your QB1 is helps with that too. So you can kind of say, I've done this and this. This is going to work great for Austin Simmons, and we can build to that. So Mike, the foundation is definitely in place for Missouri to have a top five offense. I wonder about the defensive regression. I think we could see some offensive progression from this team this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just made me think of something. Now, this may not be a fair question because we've seen a lot more of Drake May, and we've seen him go on to the NFL, and he's done quite well in the NFL. But could a case be made, Steven, that Austin Simmons, as talented or perhaps more talented, if you look at his track record, I believe he started college football when he was like 16 or 17. He was very, very young. He's apparently like genius level intelligent. Lane Kiffin loved him. The Florida Gators tried to get him. And of course, you know, he before he even went in the portal, it was like, he's going to Missouri. Basically, point being, I think he was very coveted by multiple coaching staffs. Could a case be made that, it's premature. I'm not saying he's better than Drake May today, but by the end of his career, we look back and say maybe Austin Simmons is the most talented quarterback that Chip Lindsey's ever worked with.
That's a really good question, because I think very highly of Bryce Underwood too. I actually think he's going to have a much better season this year at Michigan. It probably would be hard for me to go Simmons above May, just because I think May was also a five-star. And we saw right away the immense like talent, physical tools and all that. But I do think, I wouldn't necessarily say same upside, but I do think it's not like that far off, just because of what the reclassifying early, being coveted at a high school, being coveted from the transfer portal, what we saw the game against Georgia, what we saw in limited time last season too. So I think you could combine almost, and this kind of gets at the question here. It's like, what's that potential that we've seen in a small sample size? How does it kind of go over the course of the full season? Because that's the question I've been trying to wrestle with since this announcement is, it's like, I'm willing to upgrade Missouri in the power rankings on the offense. I am worried about the defense. I'm actually not that worried about, you know, the turnover at receiver. I think they're going to be fine there, especially if Simmons takes off. But Simmons, it might be one of those guys that, with all this potential, we're going, he's one of the biggest X factors in the SEC this year. Because if he plays up to that potential that we're talking about, then Missouri's just going to be a top 25 team and exceed all of our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Steven, in the comments, again, take it with a grain of salt, because they try to fool me sometimes. But they're saying that Owen Heineke, his hearing is prior to the draft. So okay, That'd be good news for Oklahoma. And apparently the wheels of justice move swiftly in Oklahoma, because the rest of the South, we take our time with the court system. You know what?
Things go a little slow at times, especially. I mean, SEC speed is always preferred, but they got some of those Big Ten judges down there in Tennessee, right?
Yep. All right. And then last thing before we get into the players on the rise, breakout players. Man, Steven was excited to talk about this. Texas, they get a big win here this week because of one of their transfers, Western Kentucky offensive lineman Lawrence Seymour, granted eligibility. He is perhaps going to start for the Longhorns at offensive guard this fall. Any thoughts, Steven? This is, could Texas be any more one? Does this make them number zero in your preseason rankings?
College football championship. I was thinking Super Bowl. These guys, the Texas team, they could beat the Seahawks, the Rams, 49ers. I'm just kidding, of course. Mike, I actually think, in all seriousness, on paper, this offensive line for Texas, it looks better. It feels deeper. It feels like it's going to be a better group this year. Seymour is definitely in the frequent flyer club for the transfer portal. You know, he started his career at Miami, he was at Akron and Western Kentucky, and now he's at Texas. He was a really solid player for WKU last year. You always wonder, especially on the offensive line, how do guys translate from a lower level to going up to the SEC? So there probably will be kind of an adaption period. But I think about last season, and I think about how, you know, Texas tried to go the homegrown route, stick to the guys they had, and this year they dipped into the portal, whether it's Siani from Wake Forest, Seymour here, two other guys that are probably going to be backups to start. They've at least fortified the depth. They've at least given themselves options. So I do like where this offensive line is going, and Seymour is certainly a part of that, especially if he plays up to the level he did at Western Kentucky last year.
Okay, well, I'm glad you could say that without doing cartwheels. So we do appreciate you being somewhat objective there, Stephen. Hey, will you give us a breakdown of SEC players on the rise, breakout players? What was the criteria Stephen Lassen used to come up with his list?
Mike, I tried to think about players that are going to make a jump this season. I didn't want to just pick kind of like obvious guys. I want to try to kind of pinpoint some guys that maybe are just under the radar that are going to be household names come this September. I also like to look at which players as kind of a freshman stood out and which ones are going to make that jump as a sophomore. I always think about like this when we're doing the magazine for Athlon Sports, it's like, if you're a fan of LSU, sometimes like our LSU preview is probably not going to tell you the nuts and bolts. You know the nuts and bolts, but I want to try to get a deep dive on all the other 15 teams in the league. So, you know, I want to try for fans around the SEC to know that, hey, if you're a fan of LSU, this guy from Georgia might be good. This guy from Texas. So you're trying to build that database of guys who are going to be the next stars in the SEC. There's a lot of guys coming back, but there's a lot of guys I think can take a step forward. So just trying to identify some breakout guys on the verge of becoming a household name and taking a jump this year.
Okay, so I appreciate you breaking that down for us. And I do appreciate, like I said, Stephen, we had our buddy Glenn Warsaw. He gifted a membership. So we'll start with Oklahoma in honor of cousin Glenn. Glenn, he gifted, and I wrote it down here, Brandon Show. Brandon, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephen, for the assist there. So let's get into it. Oklahoma breakout players. Anybody else want to throw us a donation? We'll move your team to the top of the list. We'll hit on all the teams. So it's not required by any means, but maybe we'll spend a little extra time on your team. So let's start with Oklahoma, Stephen. Who do you got? Breakout player for them Sooners.
Mike, I'm going offensive line. This is a position that I've got under the spotlight for Oklahoma this year. They need to become a more well-rounded offense. They need to run the ball better. They need to protect John Mateer. So the name that instantly came to mind was Michael Fasusi. Bill Bedenbaugh is one of the best offensive line coaches in the nation. He's going to earn a salary this offseason. Four starters back. Fasusi's one of them. As a freshman last year, he graded out in all of the advanced analytics as a really solid run blocker, still has room to grow in terms of pass protection, but started 10 games as a true freshman in the SEC at left tackle. I think that bodes good things for 2026 and beyond. So Michael Fasusi is my player on the rise for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I like that selection, Stephen. And you know, we've said it many, many times, and we'll just keep saying it probably till we get to the fall. But Oklahoma's got to be a lot better on the ground, and they've got to be better on the offensive line. And, this guy's got to impose his will. That's what you anticipate, a five-star lineman in his second year on campus, particularly after playing quite extensively as a freshman. So he should be where he needs to be. Physically and mentally ready for the rigors of the Southeastern Conference. So, yeah, I think that's a heck of a selection by you. I think you could probably go with any number of defensive players because Brent Venables is always going to get so much out of these guys. But I think we kind of know what we're getting from the defense. We need that offense to take a big step forward. And while everybody is enamored with quarterbacks and receivers and running backs, none of it works if that offensive line's not working. You know what?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you just want to be an optimist this year for Oklahoma, when you have that much experience coming back, that's young and sort of trending up on the upside. Plus you brought in a guy that's, you know, Emarion Harris from Arkansas, who's played in the SEC, has started. Like, the foundation for this offensive line feels a lot better than it did, you know, a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. So I like the young talent progressing in this offense and helping John Mateer in pass protection. Like we talked about with running the ball, and we talked about Hayden Hansen this offseason too. Like, they might have a good offensive line and they got a tight end who can block. Like, that should help the running game a lot. But at the same time, Mike, as basic as, you know, as awesome as skill talent is, you said it best, it's a line of scrimmage league. And, you know, you look at the teams that progressed last year in the playoff, look at Miami. Indiana was also strong in the trenches. So you've got to figure out the basics of blocking, stopping the run, opening up holes. Even on the defensive side, I mean, I like David Stone this year for Oklahoma. They got some turnover, but they've got another wave of guys ready to step in too. So I know there's some questions, but it also feels like there could be a lot of answers there for Oklahoma at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then shout out to Cousin Carl. We appreciate your buddy. Gave us $10. David Sanders, all SEC Vols are a dark, dark, dark horse to win it all. So who do you got, Steven? I was going to mention David Sanders. He would be my selection for Tennessee. Who's a breakout player for the Vols this fall?
Mike, I wrestled with this one because I had David Sanders slash this name, Ty Redman, the cornerback. This kind of was funny to think back for last year for Tennessee. You know, Jermaine McCoy, Colton Hood, Ricky Gibson, Ty Redman, they had a really nice collection of cornerbacks before injuries. And I know Tennessee fans are very high on Ty Redman, but I think the rest of the SEC and the rest of college football is going to find out about that upside, that talent, that potential thrown into the mix right away last year with all of those injuries, became one of the top freshman defensive backs in the country. He was targeted 76 times. He gave up 45 catches. So there's room to grow there, starting 12 games at that young point of your career with a lot of upside, better defensive coordinator. I think a staff that will get more out of him. I think Ty Redman can make that jump from being really solid young player to maybe all SEC this year.
Yeah, that's an interesting selection, Steven. I don't know if you saw it, but who was it? It was, I can't remember. But Tennessee had a guy at the combine said, hey, Ty Redman, he's going to be All-American next year. So, you know, he's got the belief in that locker room of the players. They need him. They need him to be that. They need him to take that big progression. And you're right, he, you know, forced into action due to injuries. And usually when you throw in a true freshman, man, you're going to have some issues. And he was, I think it's fair to say, inconsistent. I don't know if inconsistent, but just, you know, it took him a while to get going, as it would any true freshman at cornerback in the Southeastern Conference. I think that was basically Georgia's game plan was, let's just attack Ty Redman. You know, again, that was early in the season. He got better. Even though the defense overall didn't. But, yeah, I like that selection, but I'm sticking with David Sanders just because I've seen too many spring videos of him dominating. Now, maybe, again, we could always spin it, right? Tennessee's defensive line, maybe they're garbage. I'm not buying that. I'm saying David Sanders, he's five-star. I think he's the highest-paid player on the roster. He's got to go out there and show that this year, going from right tackle to left tackle. And I think Tennessee's offensive line could be one of the strengths of the entire roster this fall.
I do too. And I think just thinking about Tennessee's offense with a young quarterback, like having that experience coming back on the offensive line, I think with four returning starters, they've got one of the best running backs in the conference. They've got a good receiving core. Like all the ingredients are there for a good offense. It's just on Josh Heupel to get the most out of McIntyre or Faison Brandon. But you can also lean on that supporting cast. And so that's really the best setup for one of these young quarterbacks, whether it is McIntyre or Brandon. I also thought about Chaz Coleman. I know he's one of the most high profile defensive transfers into the SEC, but somebody who's played in Jim Knowles' defense. He was a highly touted recruit before he got to Penn State. He kind of scratched the surface of his potential there. So I think the Vols got a couple names I think certainly could fit this list by the end of summer as like breakout candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the comments they're saying Kalen Lee, the transfer from Auburn. You know, he's another one that he'll need to come in and be ready to play. I've heard, I think his name's Gilliam, the defensive lineman transfer from Penn State. He's another one to keep your eye on that's turning some heads during spring practice. So basically, you could pick anybody on defense because they were so bad last year.
Right. And, you know, I just kind of cited the numbers for Ty Redman, and it's like, okay, he gave up, 45 catches on 76 targets. And you might go, well, that's not very good. He's a true freshman on a really bad defense. Like to me, that shows like, yeah, you took your lumps as a true freshman, but you also fought back on a bad defense. And next year, 2026, if you have more help up front, you have a better scheme, you could see where this is going as far as upside. So I'm pretty optimistic about Ty Redmond developing, taking that next step under Jim Knowles.
All right. Well, before we move on, Stephen, I'll tell you somewhere where the Cousins can take a step up if they'd be so inclined, is to go check out Cheers. Man, Cousin Shay's over the moon on his Cheers because they sent us some of this fantastic product, Stephen, and the Cousins can go check it out for themselves over at cheershealth.com. Use promo code THATSEC. You'll see it on the screen there, and there's a link in the show notes as well to get 20% off over at cheershealth.com. And again, they sent us over some of these fancy pills, Stephen, some after alcohol aid. Buddy, let me tell you, if you're having a couple cold ones like we usually are on a weekend, take you some Cheers to ensure that you're feeling good, get your rest. It's good for your liver. That's what this stuff is. It helps you in so many different ways. There's been over 50 million doses have been sold of Cheers, and it's available in over 30,000 retail stores. But we can save you 20% if you go to cheershealth.com and use promo code THATSEC. Stay hydrated. Get you some sleep. It's important as you get older. You know, you're going out there, St. Paddy's Day, what have you. Your St. Paddy's would have been a heck of a lot better if you came packing with some Cheers. All you got to do is take a little bit of it right before you your last drink or right before you go to bed. And they claim, Stephen, that you will feel 50% better or your money back. So if you feel 49.9% better, you get your money back. So again, go check them out. Cheershealth.com, promo code THATSEC. I think the only reason Shane's on the golf course today is because he took his Cheers last night, and he does not have a headache. He got him some sleep. You know what?
I think Tennessee's defense needed some of that last year with all the injuries. They'd have been 50% better.
They needed to be about 1,000% better, but yeah, they didn't have their Cheers, that's for sure. But I'll tell you who did, Stephen. Our buddy Bulldog Mississippi. We appreciate you, Bulldog. He gifted. Da, 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 da. I have it written down here. C. Robertson. C. Welcome to
family.
Yeah. All right, Stephen. So who's your breakout player for the Mississippi State Bulldogs?
Mike, this won't be any surprise. Man, I love watching Kamario Taylor. I am so fired up to watch him develop this spring into 2026. He is going to be one of my top breakout quarterbacks for this season. I love his potential, his upside in this Jeff Lebby offense. Jeff Lebby knows how to manufacture points, the scheme. They can do a lot of things with Taylor's mobility, with the offensive line concerns that they have. Just think about some of the skill talent too. I mean, you know, Anthony Evans, they brought in some guys from the portal, Fluff Bothwell's back. Taylor's good enough on his own, but if he's just a point guard in this offense, we know they're going to score points. So the upside was very obvious before we started those two games late last year. We saw it in those starts as well. He's starting to kind of scratch the surface of his potential. So very, very high on Kamario Taylor this year. This Mississippi State offense could be very entertaining.
Yeah, and who knows, Stephen? I mean, you get a special quarterback down there in Starkville. We have seen it before. You could rise all the way up to number one in the rankings. Now, clearly, I'm not suggesting that's going to happen, but if Kamario Taylor is who we think he is, you know, I think it raises the entire profile of this Mississippi State program. And is it fair to say that his success could very well determine Jeff Lebby's job status? Like if, God forbid, he's not very good or whatever, like, I don't know if Lebby's getting another year. But if he's what we think he is, and they have a surprising record this year, you know, how could you not be excited about Mississippi State football and your future with Kamario Taylor? I think he's that big of a prospect for them.
I think that's 100% right, Mike, because when you think about just, you know, the talent level across these teams, where they come into the season and most preseason predictions, you know, one of the ways that you kind of punch above where you're probably going to be predicted or where the talent level says you should finish is having a superstar quarterback. And I think Taylor can be that kind of guy. You know, Blake Shapen was, you know, I think kind of the good starter quarterback for Jeff Lebby's system. Now you got a chance to take it up another notch with someone of Taylor's talent. So I think he can make the guys around him better. And if you can just figure out a way to be, you know, X amount of percent better on defense, that can get them over the hump in some of these close games to get to kind of six, seven, eight victories type of season for them. You did mention Jeff Lebby and his and kind of status there. I think it's critical that he, as an offensive guy, he's got this super talented quarterback that he maximizes it, and they hit. Like, if this doesn't work out, it's going to be hard. I know they got some other talent behind him, including Jaden Rashada. It's probably going to be hard to overcome whiffing on a quarterback like this or not developing him. So I do think his development, not only for this year, but thinking about 27, 28, beyond kind of where does this go, I think Taylor's development weighs a lot into that.
Mm-hmm. Man, I always forget about Jaden Rashada. What if, Steven? I mean, he was an elite prospect himself. And, man, how bad of a look would it be if Billy Napier, if Jaden Rashada is the best quarterback in the SEC?
That would not look very good for Sunbelt Billy, will it?
I don't think that'd look good on anybody.
Yeah. Also, AJ Swan also at Mississippi State too. So they have a kind of a collection of SEC. Remember these guys, right?
Man, they got some big names down there.
Right, man. Could you imagine though, for all this hype of Taylor, if it is Jaden Rashada who ends up hitting as the starting quarterback?
Well, hey, shout out big names here. Cousin Emily, we appreciate you, Emily. She gave us a donation. A lot of good Auburn players now. I heard an interview with Cole Best today. Really like what he had to say. Still don't want Shane backing Auburn. So shout out for Cousin Emily. Who would be your breakout player for them Auburn Tigers?
Is Shane backing Auburn like a curse?
Oh, Shane backing anybody is a curse, yes.
It worked out great for that Missouri season, didn't it? He got in the hype video.
That was his one.
Well, I'm high on Auburn too. I think from a improvement standpoint, I think this team definitely gets to a bowl game. So one of the reasons that I think they're going to get to a bowl game is a much improved offense. It starts with Byron Brown. I see the internet has discovered Byron Brown's throwing motion. Yes, it is very awkward, but it gets the job done. So with that in mind, Mike, I am going Keyshawn Singleton. Obviously, with just three returning starters, it's hard to find, you know, with the turnover, to find somebody who's necessarily proven from last year at Auburn. So one of the transfers outside of Byron Brown makes sense. Keyshawn Singleton, I love the fact that he is able, from a transition standpoint, he's played in this offense. It's just arrive and go. You can go fast from day one. You've played in the system. You got your coach, you got your quarterback. Good size, good speed combo, probably going to be one of the fastest players probably in the SEC. He was a secondary weapon 2024, number one target last year for Byron Brown, 50 catches for over 800 yards. Also, kind of a homecoming too. He played his high school ball just outside of Atlanta. So a little bit of a homecoming, chance to play in the bigger stage. I think Keyshawn Singleton's going to have a heck of a year.
You know, everybody gets enamored again. We're like a quarterback centric world now, but you know, with all these offenses, with the receivers, with the quarterbacks, how well do you think Auburn will run the football in this goalish offense, given that, you know, the offensive line will be completely retooled, but they did bring in a lot of guys that are very experienced in major college football. So should Auburn fans be able should they expect to be able to run the football this fall?
I like the running backs. You know, I think Jeremiah Cobb, Bryson Washington, the transfer from Baylor, I think is a pretty solid 1-2 punch. I am a little bit worried about the offensive line and how it all comes together. On the flip side, I do think Alex Golish and his track record, I think there's ways they can kind of scheme around some of those issues. So I would anticipate that they eventually figure this out. Maybe it's a little bit slow at first. If nothing else, too, Byron Brown's mobility could really help with this, too, kind of overcoming some of these offensive line questions. If studying the portal, teams that have to start four or five guys, it kind of takes them almost like half a season to get into to figure out the right five and get that mix gelled. So I do worry early on, but I think talent wise, Brown and the two running backs, I think they got the ingredients to get that on track this year.
Mm-hmm. And just hopefully, you know, if unlike the last coach, when we had an outstanding running back, no need to give him the football. You know, I think this coaching staff, if they have someone on a heater, so to speak, they're going to feed them the rock and get everything they can out of them, which will be a welcome change on the Plains.
Oh, Mike, 110%. There is zero doubt in my mind that Alex Golish is going to do a much better job of maximizing the talent on the roster on the offensive side of the ball than Hugh Freeze did. Interestingly enough, Byron Brown, of course, he led the South Florida in rushing attempts last year, but some of the like the next tier of guys was kind of a committee. So to your point, they ride the hot hand, figure out who's going to be the one, and they can kind of work from there. So I think there's the talent. I like the coaching staff. How does it all come together with a revamped offensive line is one of the biggest questions in the SEC, I think.
Well, speaking of maximizing talent, that's, again, was a huge issue in Gainesville, but hopefully it will no longer be under John Sumrall, who all he does is win. Who would be your breakout player for the Florida Gators this fall?
I'm going Jaden Woods, the edge for the Florida defense. Keeping him out of the portal was huge for Florida. You know, being able to retain guys like Jaden Baugh, the Brown and Wilson and Woods, like having that young core of dependable players is a pretty good place for John Sumrall to start. So Jaden Woods, another guy that just seems to be kind of scratching the surface of his potential. Seven tackles for a loss, 12 quarterback hurries in a very limited, like 400 type snap season for him as a younger player. And I think you're kind of, this is kind of one of those defenders that with more snaps, with John Sumrall, with Brad White, that those guys are really good at maximizing the talent here. So I like Jade Woods to kind of become a cornerstone for this Florida defense off the edge this year.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, but he went into the portal or was considering it. And then, you know, after Sumrall getting there and meeting with him and all that, he made the decision to return, if I'm not mistaken. So I think Sumrall wisely understood the impact of having him on the roster this year, and he was quite a coveted prospect by every other team that was probably urging him to exit the program.
Yeah, younger defensive players with that type of skill set are very coveted in the portal, especially if you can get them for multiple years. So and you know, you look at his production and go, well, there wasn't much there. Well, yeah. I mean, he's like kind of like a part-time player, and you questions about how Florida maximized its players last year. So to retain him and be able to sell him on this is what we can do in 2026 with your talent, X, Y, and Z, I think it kind of says he's just kind of, like I said, starting to scratch the surface of that potential and kind of can become maybe like an all-SEC type of player for Florida this year.
Now, one guy I wanted to shout out, though, for the Gators, Stephen, and he's already kind of technically broken out. He was all SEC freshman, but I think this guy could take his game to the next level and perhaps be all-American superstar household name type if he does big things and if Florida wins a lot this year. But that's Vernell Brown, VB3. You know, I hear they're going to use him more even in the special teams return game. He was an outstanding true freshman. I don't know that he scored a touchdown. I could be mistaken. I don't believe he did, but again, I could be mistaken about that. But he came onto the scene. He was arguably their number one receiver after some injuries and Dallas Wilson not being there. So, you know, fingers crossed, Dallas Wilson's there for the entire season to kind of be his, you know, I don't want to say Robin to Batman because they're both kind of Batman, but just, you know, having a complimentary receiver next to him. I think Vernell Brown could be one of the best playmakers in the entire country next year.
I agree with you. I think Brown and Wilson, and you throw Eric Singleton in there. I mean, that's one of the better trios, maybe one of the better receiving cores in the country next year for Florida. I mean, and that's a pretty good place for whether it's Aaron Filo, Tramiel Jones, whoever ends up winning the starting job, to be able to turn around and hand the ball off to Jaden Baugh, to be able to throw to those receivers. The quarterback that wins that job is in a pretty good place. But I like, you know, I hate to go back to that term, Mike, but you're starting, like, those receivers, Wilson and Brown, the potential was pretty obvious last year in a limited time. And if you have a better scheme, get more consistent play at quarterback, that gives them the opportunity to take that game up to the next level.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm very fascinated, Stephen, to hear your thoughts on LSU, which I don't know if you saw this. They posted their online roster, and, man, they were having trouble having bio photographs for about a half the team because they were not on the roster last year. But I counted. It was like half the damn roster was not there last year. So where would you go for them LSU Tigers breakout player in 2026?
Mike, we just saw, and you keep seeing this with the NFL draft, Mansoor Delaney, you know, is probably going to be one of the first defenders off the board in the NFL draft. And so there's a glaring kind of hole at cornerback. Well, the guy that's going to fill it is my pick to be a breakout player for LSU this year, and DJ Pickett. He was targeted 38 times last year, gave up 20 catches, kind of like we talked about with Ty Redmond. You take your ups and your downs that early in your career. He just feels like a young talent that is just kind of starting to figure this out. And he's the next wave of stars for this defense. I expect Blake Baker, Lane Kiffin, they'll get the most out of him. So I like DJ Pickett's upside, kind of stepping into a starting role. Delaney was great. I think Pickett will be good in time as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know why this just occurred to me, Stephen, but, you know, I had last year's record up here, and we all know it was a disaster, and we just forgotten season. Nobody cares. I get it. That is completely fair. But given that we have retained the defensive staff and the many key defensive players, could there be anything to be said that, if you recall, Stephen, that the storyline for that Alabama, it was a 20-9 loss, but the storyline was like, oh, Ty Simpson's hurt. What's wrong with Bama? And then the Oklahoma one, that was like, oh, I guess Oklahoma's tight. They got a playoff spot on the line. LSU should have won it probably, but Oklahoma stole it at the very end. But you know, LSU again lost 17-13. Could the storyline that very few people have caught up to is, man, LSU's defense, even down some players, was really good late in the season. And normally that would mean nothing because when you have a coaching transition, none of the players, none of the coordinators are back. But that side of the ball, there's a lot of talent back. You know, how good could LSU's defense be next season with all the continuity there?
Would you buy, I think it's fair to say, top five in the SEC at least, somewhere in there?
I think that's, they certainly belong in the discussion.
I think obviously returning Blake Baker was huge because when, you know, could have been the Tulane head coach, he may could have left for other jobs. Being able to retain him and not start over after the success they've had was pretty significant. Cause to me, you're kind of like marrying the Kiffin Weiss high powered offense with a defense that's got a track record of getting stops. Last year, they had a lot of new faces. They were one of the SEC's better defenses. I mean, LSU scored about 23 points a game. Their defense had to be almost perfect for this team to have a chance to win each week, given the struggles on the offensive side of the ball. And there's a lot of pieces. I mean, whether it's TJ Daugherty transferring in, we've talked about, Pickett, Ty Benefield, the safety from Boise State transfer. There's a lot of guys in the portal, and the foundation's not bad in what they bring back from last year's experience. So I'm buying LSU, Mike. I know you may not be on board, but I'm buying LSU because I think they're going to score some points, and I think they got one of the best defenses in the SEC.
Oh, man. Okay, so there you go. You probably got mad as hell when I went on FiveBob and said Texas and LSU are not making the playoff, but we could have that discussion for a different day if it angers you too much to even consider it.
Should I break up with Arch and get with LSU, you think?
It's not too late, Steven. It is not too late. Well, one team we certainly think will make the playoff next year. How about Georgia, Steven? Them dogs, there's so many candidates here for a breakout player for Kirby Smart & Company. Who do you got as the dogs' breakout player?
Mike, I like Elijah Griffin. And I think about Elijah Griffin from the perspective that, you know, Georgia, I wouldn't say they've massively regressed, but you think about like Jalen Carter and you think about some of those guys in the trenches that were just creating havoc and they were just a handful for the offensive line. And I don't know they've necessarily been up to that potential maybe the last 2 years. But if someone like Elijah Griffin continues to come on, especially with Christian Miller off to the NFL, Jordan Hall's coming back from injury, they need some guys to step up and be difference makers. And so Griffin kind of fits the mold of he played over 300 snaps as a freshman. The talent is there. We know Georgia's got good coaching. They're going to help him make the jump, and it feels like the opportunity is going to be there for him to take off in 2026.
Ooh, man, yeah, I think you're right. I know it's early. You don't want to reveal anything. But how confident are you? Have we ever had a, I'm sure we have. I just, you know, how it's so rare to win the SEC 3 years in a row. Is Georgia the odds-on favorite to do it again, you think, in your mind?
I personally like Georgia right now as the favorite to win the SEC. I was a little surprised that their win total was 9.5 because it feels like they're good for 10 victories every year. I think it's Georgia or Texas, Mike. But I would probably lean the Bulldogs right now just because of they've had the edge the last couple of years over Texas. Bring back the most returning starters in the SEC. I think their defense is easily going to be one of the best in the country. Some questions, obviously, about the passing game, but I think, you know, also we could say the same thing about Texas with the how does this offensive line come together? Got a Will Muschamp and his defensive staff. How does that come together? Both of these teams have questions. They feel like the top two, and I wouldn't say it's clear. They just seem like they're a cut above everybody else in the SEC right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that logic is fair. I'm not there with Texas just yet, but let's jump to Texas, Steven. Where how about the breakout player for your beloved Longhorns?
I mean, it's Arch, right? He's going to win breakout player. He's going to win the Heisman. He's going to win NFL Offensive Player of the Year. I'm kidding, of course. Let's talk about Cade Phillips, the cornerback. You know, if you look at the Texas secondary with Malik Muhammad moving on, they got some other pieces, Michael Taft. They have some turnover on the back end of this defense. They brought in Bo Masco from Rutgers. Looks like he's probably going to be a contributor at corner, or maybe he's going to play somewhere else in that secondary. He should be one of the starters. But Cade Phillips, if you look at his numbers in limited time last year, 13 receptions allowed, but gave up just 96 yards. So when people were catching the ball, it was it. He was, you know, tackling to the ground immediately in the bowl game. I don't take too much from bowl games, except sometimes individual performances. And he was everywhere. 8 tackles, 2 of those went for a loss, 1 pass breakup. He looks like he's going to be a difference maker in the secondary somewhere. How all the pieces fit together, I think, remains to be seen. But I think we saw in last year in limited time and then an extra opportunity in the bowl game. There's a lot of upside here with Cade Phillips.
Yeah, and I think it's natural. Everybody and their mothers is going to expect the world of Cam Coleman. So, again, he's technically, I guess you could say, already broken out. But I think he could go to another level playing in a competent offense with more importantly, a competent quarterback, something that he's not had much during his college experience. So you got to mention him. But how about the sophomore, Lance Jackson, touted prospect, playing opposite Colin Simmons. I mean, basically anybody out playing opposite Colin Simmons, I think could be a breakout because so many opposing the offenses is going to be locked in on him.
Oh, 100%, especially given the turnover from some of the other ends that are gone. You look at what's happening at linebacker with Anthony Hill moving on. Do like Rasheem Biles, the Pitt transfer. But I think the general theme there is there's a lot of turnover and there's a lot of transition with the new defensive coordinator. And so you need somebody like Jackson opposite of Simmons to step up so that way Colin Simmons can still be as disruptive as we've seen throughout his career, Mike. So I think that's a great call. Maybe even Justice Terry, throw in maybe Khalik Lockett, a receiver too. I mean, Texas has a lot of options here for a breakout player in 2026.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hey, sticking in the great state of Texas, how about A&M, Stephen? Who would be a breakout player for Mike Elko and the Aggies?
How about Ashton Bethel Roman? Really liked what I saw from him in this sort of like second to late part of the season. 24 catches, 503 yards, but it's the average, over 20 yards per catch. He is a big play waiting to happen, and they're going to need more of him with KC Concepcion going to the NFL. Mario Craver's back. I feel like A&M has enough weapons at receiver. But it feels like if Bethel Roman can sort of take what he did last year as sort of the third receiver, be the second receiver, maintain that big playability, that's really going to help Marcel Reed continue to progress and get into that conversation as one of the SEC's top quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an excellent selection. I really do. I know they have another promising, I believe he was a freshman last year. He got banged up. So, you know, there's going to be some options there. But I really wanted to ask you about the defense for Coach Elko. I know it's, you know, it's hard to pick apart an 11-win season where, you know, you were literally a half away from a perfect season, a regular season anyway. But any concern, I don't know if even concern is the right word because they're, Coach Elko's done such a good job, but it may be any surprise that it has taken this long. And again, 2 years is not that long, but with the transfer portal and things of that nature, and it's not like he was walking into a roster that was devoid of talent, but any concern at all that the defense has not been better? And will we see it be better, you think, in year three, under Coach Mike Elko as a head coach?
It's a good question. I think on the surface, I mean, they're losing, you know, Torian York. You're losing some pieces up front. It is going to be a bit of a transition period. They were, looks like, eighth in the SEC in yards per play allowed last year. So I would like to see that be a little bit higher for this team. The other thing was sort of like they've had one problem each of the last 2 years. It was the pass defense in 2024. Last year, it was giving up rushing plays, like too many big rushing plays. We saw that against Miami in the college football playoff. I trust Elko. I also look at and see there are some questions here. Like when you do take away like Torian York, you take away the blanket, you know, you have some other turnover. The flip side of that, Mike, is they have done a really nice job in the portal. I think this year and in previous years, like when they bring guys in, they usually do a pretty good job of making an impact. So top five in the SEC defense, that's probably doable. I'd say I'd probably put them maybe on the outside of that category right now. Let's kind of see how it all comes together this spring. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. But I think they've got with a new offensive line, new offensive coordinator. I'm sure they're tired of hearing that, but we need the defense to be a lot better. Because I do think it's going to be maybe not a struggle is a wrong word, but even if Marcel Reed performs more consistently, and that was kind of, I think that's the biggest complaint I have about him is consistency. If he's more consistent, he's a better player. That's a huge if with a new offensive line, your best receiver who apparently tore it up at the combine, all these guys gone. It's not a guarantee that your quarterback is going to get better. But if he does, I still think the offense regresses because it was so good. And again, I'm not saying it's going to be awful, but it's, I don't think it's going to be as good as it was. But maybe, hey, I'd be happy to be wrong. You know what?
It's very hard, I think, in college football, always to just assume that what happened last year is going to happen again. And it could be for a variety of reasons. It could be personnel turnover. It could be coaching turnover. It could be, hey, we think this transfer is going to be really good. He doesn't work out. College football, the volatility from year to year is so wide. It, you know, Mike, if we were talking, you know, NFL, we would just assume, oh, Josh Allen's back with the Bills, pencil in their offense in the top five. Like, the volatility from year to year is pretty wide in college football. So I think where there's a trust factor with Texas A&M is, I think Elko seems to get way more out of the roster than Jimbo did. But I do think, just given the offensive line turnover, they've lost pieces at running back, they've lost pieces at receiver, quarterback didn't end last year on a high note. All of those said to me, there's probably going to be some regression there. If they exceed that expectation, they're probably back in the playoff and they're back in the, maybe even in the SEC championship game. I did want to throw out Marco Jones on the defense for Texas A&M. He was a guy in the spring game last year that had a huge game, probably set the bar too high. But given what they lose up front and trying to replenish that, like, now that he's had a full year in the SEC, weight room, all that, maybe he's a guy that breaks out for this defense too and helps alleviate some of that turnover.
Well, don't give Coach Elko too much credit, Steven. She said he gets more out of the talent than Jimbo, because I think my damn local peewee coach can get more out of the talent than a damn Jimbo. You know, there's a reason that man has not gotten a job since getting fired down there in College Station.
I think he's on the ACC network quite a lot these days, isn't he?
It's the only job he can get right now. Watch that network nobody's going to watch. But hey, shout out Brodo with the donation. He wanted us all to know he tooted. He paid us $2. And hey, if you give us money, I'm going to read it. Shout out Carl, Crazy Carl. Mike, why is Steven claiming Georgia is a decaying dynasty? Oh, is that what you're saying, Steven? Are they the decaying dynasty?
Absolutely not. I'm considering picking Georgia number one in our preseason magazine. Hint, hint. Ooh, or clue,
that's a kiss
clue
of death right there.
I know. Yeah. Last year it was Texas. So maybe Mike wants me to pick a Big Ten team, so that way I curse the Big Ten and that team from the SEC is hoisting the championship trophy in January. Is that right?
Just do a 16-team tie, I guess they're 18, right? The whole damn conference. Put them all first for me.
Mike, that would make my life so much easier. Do you know how much agony and, like, you know, stress this could save me? This might add years to my life.
Hey, well, what's going to add years to your life, Steven? Is Steven up? We appreciate you, buddy. He gave us a donation. I'm going to play his jingle for him here. Thank you, Steven Up.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
He says, always enjoy Steven Lassen's analysis and appreciate the cousins' insight. So appreciate you, Steven Up. Let's do Alabama for Steven Up. Steven, who is your breakout Bammer?
Shout out to Steven Up, by the way. I always appreciate you hanging out on the show. Mike, I've got a couple options here, and I think it's no surprise. Let's go to the offense. And we know Ryan Williams is back. If he can be one of the best receivers in the SEC, that helps the young quarterback. We could probably put pencil in Keelan Russell here, but we'll wait till he officially wins the job. I'm going to go with Lotsier Brooks. After the season that he had last year, I love the way that he played in that playoff game. 5 catches for 79 yards and 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma. 32 catches overall. The bulk of those snaps came basically in the slot last season. I think he could be a really good safety valve for the young quarterback. I see opportunity. I see talent. Love the production from last year. So I think Brooks is going to be right up there as one of the top targets for Alabama, basically building on what we saw in that standout playoff game against Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this guy's already tactically broken out, if you want to say it, but any consideration to offensive lineman Michael Carroll, the sophomore who, you know, with a retooled offensive line, this is going to be critical. And I thought it was interesting I don't know if you saw these comments or the cousins. We played it, I believe, last week. But just the fact that Bama's got an entirely new offensive line, new offensive line coach, and Coach DeBoering said, man, this is first time in my coaching career that we've had this much transition on the offensive line. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, as soft as Bama played, even though they lost some talent. So I think Michael Carroll, we're going to need him to be an anchor, fair or not, early in his college career.
Definitely, Mike. He was actually, I was wrestling Brooks, Carroll, which one fits the profile here? And especially, I think it's very, Carroll played pretty well as a freshman last year. You're stepping into a larger role. You're kind of going to be one of the bookends, one of the centerpieces of this rebuild offensive line. So he absolutely fits. And I think Alabama's offensive line, and I think defensive line too, are just so fascinating to see how they progress this spring. I mean, there's a lot of transfers on the defensive side of the ball fighting for time. I think Yanze Pierre, the edge rusher, probably not getting enough love this offseason as one of the top players back in the SEC. So there are some nice pieces. And if Carroll and Brooks and some of these other younger players step up, that might make Kalen DeBoer have fewer sleepless nights with all the turnover.
Well, and then I'm sorry to go on a tangent here, off topic, but Bama, they get this reputation, and I think it's somewhat warranted, Stephen, for being a soft program now. Now, again, are they soft? You can't win 11 games. You can't be the number one seed in the Southeastern Conference going into the SEC title game and truly be soft. You just can't. I mean, you can mock them all you want. But at the same time, struggle to run the football. A lot of short yardage situations. They bring out the bag of tricks. Now, that going back and watching DeBoering at Washington, he kind of did that there too. So maybe that's a little bit in his DNA, but I don't think they're every third or fourth and short using the offensive tackle as a receiver or running back or doing reverses. I don't think they're doing that time and time and time again, because they have confidence in their linemen to get it. I mean, I think they were doing that out of necessity. So I ask you all that, Stephen, to ask, is Alabama a soft program? And again, that's thrown out a little too loosely, but I mean, like, soft, are they tough enough basically to win a national championship? Because I think it's absolutely fair to question that.
I think it's fair to question it. I think that the right answer is, I think we're going to find out a lot this year, because they weren't good enough last year. I think, on one hand, we're talking about how rebuilt the offensive line is, and you're right. They weren't good enough last year, so maybe losing some guys and maybe turning over the group with the new offensive line coach, maybe that helps. When you lose a bunch of players who struggled, is it really a loss, or are you maybe opening yourself up for improvement with a new group next year? I think back to when Kalen DeBoer took Washington to the national championship, and that year, old SEC friend Dylan Johnson ran for over 1,000 yards. So I think they want to run the ball. I just don't think they could last year. And I think whether it was running backs, they had injuries at the start of the season. They had some younger players stepping in. The offensive line wasn't very good. Mike, I do think they need to run the ball better, just simply because they got to have balance. I don't know how many times they can keep going to that receiver's going to get the pitch on third and fourth and short, because they're going to need to come up with some ways to actually manufacture, hey, it's third and one. We've got to be able to just line up and run the ball. Caden Proctor's going to be in the NFL, so you can't go to that package. So I think it's a part of what DeBoer wants to do, but for a variety of reasons, it didn't work last year. And so just thinking 2026 very broadly, it's like, I like Austin Mack. I like Keelan Russell. But none of that matters if they don't have the other parts of that, which is a better offensive line and a more consistent rushing attack.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, how about we move on to Arkansas, year one, Ryan Silverfield, breakout player, a lot of candidates here for the Razorbacks, but who'd you go with?
Mike, we are going to the trenches, because I think Arkansas has the potential to have kind of quietly have a pretty solid offensive line. Kobe Branham, Last year started 11 games at guard, made the SEC all-freshman team. He is one of two starters that are back, plus the portal entries, I think gives them a really solid foundation. Like what I saw from him as a run blocker, he can only get better from here. So Kobe Branham, kind of one of the centerpieces of this rebuilt Arkansas offense. You could maybe look at a guy like Braylon Russell, Sutton Smith at running back. I think they got some promising receivers too, but a guy who played a lot as a freshman, I like him to keep getting better in 2026 on the offensive line.
Man, wouldn't that be something, Steven, that soon as Sam Pittman leaves, if the offensive line was really good again, when we signed him up, that was the one thing we thought we were getting, was we would have, we'd be elite on the offensive line, but for a variety of reasons, it never quite was. But I think traditional Razorback fans, they appreciate and understand the importance of that. And I think they would sign up for that.
And especially given that you have a first-time starter at quarterback. I mean, KJ Jackson played a little bit last year. If it's not him, AJ Hill, very limited, especially after 1 year at Memphis where he wasn't the starter. You've got to give your quarterback a foundation. And we've talked about how it is a line of scrimmage league. So if you've got a good offensive line that opens up guys like, and they have good skill talent. Sutton Smith is very good from Memphis, and Braylon Russell has flashed. Chris Marshall, who was at Texas A&M, he was a Boise big-time receiver with a lot of talent. They have some interesting skill pieces, but if they can solve the starting five with that experience plus portal, it gives KJ Jackson or AJ Hill a good foundation to start from.
Mm-hmm. Man, Chris Marshall, that's not a name I've heard in a long time. You know, if he was playing 10 years ago, he'd be at Last Chance U, but he's back in the SEC, so... Good luck to you. You know what?
He would qualify as kind of, he ran into some issues at Boise State where he was suspended, but it's a good upside take if you're Arkansas. Like, it's the kind of take that you're going to have to hit on probably to close the gap. And like I said, the talent's there, the production's been there. He's a good player for Arkansas.
All right. How about South Carolina Gamecocks, Steven? Huge year for Beamer and company. They've got a lot of star power, but who potentially is a breakout player for the Gamecocks?
How about Jaden Sellers? I like Lenora Sellers to rebound in a big way this year, but Jaden Sellers, 22 catches in the last five games of last season. The Lenoris to Jaden connection was working well, and now South Carolina has a better offensive coordinator in a better scheme. They've got Nick Harbor who's starting to come on. You could kind of see where this is going. So I think Jaden Sellers and his development can only help South Carolina's passing game take off, plus the better scheme, plus Nick Harbor getting better too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good pick. And one playing in this new offensive system, going to be pretty fascinated to see how Kendall Briles utilizes his talent that he's got to work with, where I think it's easily case could be made that people didn't realize how much talent Carolina had. Oh, and did you see old Tashula? We were laughing about it. He got hired by Minnesota. So
yes,
that's more good news for Mississippi State, who plays Minnesota week two. But, I think clearly this will be a easy case of, addition by subtraction, and that's being disrespectful to Kendall Briles, because he really is a good coordinator. But I think Carolina fans are they're ready for it, and they're going to be pleasantly surprised what a team looks like that's competently coached on the offensive side of the football.
Mike, I think that is so spot on, because I think about the Briles offense and how it's not an offense that takes like 3 years to break in. Like, I think it's, there are some offenses, they find easy throws. It's kind of a college-centric offense. It's not like, hey, we're going to build an NFL style, like Bill Belichick, kind of wanted to run some archaic offense in the 90s, and it was terrible. You're trying to get something that's very easy for Lenora Sellers to get the reads, to be able to execute as a runner when he needs to. And so I think just having that sort of, like, it's a system that's proven it's worked fast. You've got all these good pieces. They were just underutilized last year in that scheme. So I like pretty much everything that's gone on for South Carolina this offseason, except the injuries on the offensive line. It's the only downgrade for this program so far.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, how about the other Columbia, Missouri? We already talked about Austin Simmons, but who will be the breakout player for them Tigers this fall?
Mike, we talked about this guy last week, and I think we're on the same page. Donovan Olubide, the receiver, last year, 30 catches as a freshman. After in a season where they had a lot of inconsistent quarterback play, he really flashed for me every time I was watching Missouri. I think the talent is there. Sure-handed guy, no drops as a freshman last season. So I think his play could take off with Austin Simmons, assuming Austin Simmons also reaches his potential this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only problem that I've heard, and I'm sure it's not truly a problem, but he says, man, it's a little different catching a football from a left-handed passer. So another reason you name Austin Simmons a starter quickly so that you know you're going to be catching it from a lefty, get that work in. But yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he was one of the rare freshmen that it was like it was too hard to keep him off the field. So the fact that as a true freshman, he was coming in, making plays in the Southeastern Conference, Donovan Olubide, hopefully I said that right this time. I think he could be one of the better playmakers in the Southeastern Conference this fall.
I do too. I think you saw it in just the small doses last season, even with the inconsistent quarterback play, of the talent level that he has and what he could be doing with a better quarterback, a more consistent passing game. You add that also, Mike, I like, you know, Caden Lee coming over from Ole Miss. You know, got that kind of connection already with Austin Simmons. I mentioned Caleb Goody, the transfer from Cincinnati. He was a big play threat. So you can kind of see how this works out. Like, you got the sure-handed guy. You got a guy who's been familiar with Austin Simmons. Caleb Goody's got the big play speed. Like, you know, this goes back to our top five offense in Missouri. Like, all the ingredients are on the counter, and they're looking like a pretty good cake. How does it all come together?
Oh, did you say cake? Shane's going to be popping in the comments at any moment here. But all right, a couple teams left here, Stephen. We have not yet gone down to Oxford. Who would be your breakout player for them Rebels?
How about Caleb Cunningham, the wide receiver? A high-profile addition in the recruiting class, but only caught one pass last season in three games. But the opportunity is there this year with Caden Lee gone, Dazon Stribling's gone, Harrison Wallace. You brought in Daryl Gill and Jonte Cook from Syracuse and some other guys. There's a lot of pieces in this receiving core. But if you're Ole Miss and Cunningham can start to realize some of that talent, some of the transfers you brought in, I mean, Trinidad Chambliss is back. This offense is not going to miss a beat in 2026.
Yeah, and that could be critical to a list like this, don't you think, Stephen? If you're talking breakout candidates, having an elite quarterback, you know, we know there's going to be production. Now the question is, well, who's going to be the one catching all these passes that are going to be coming from arguably the best quarterback in the conference? So, yeah, there's a massive opportunity for a guy like Caleb Cunningham, and man, you just hope he realizes that five-star potential. And it's pretty typical for a player to come in and by year two make an impact. I think sometimes we get enamored with guys that are touted via the recruiting services. We're like, oh, I guess he's a bust. He didn't do much his freshman year, when the vast majority of players don't have a huge impact their first year on campus.
Also, you don't necessarily have to ask your freshmen to play a lot right away now with the portal too. If you have a spot that's a question, you just go get a guy with some experience. And so, I mean, that's kind of what Ole Miss did last year, bringing in Harrison Wallace and some of those other guys. I mean, that's the good news for Cunningham and some of these other receivers. It feels like somebody's going to be catching a lot of passes this year at Ole Miss. Who they are, how it's divided, is like the big question. If you're playing college fantasy like me, like, it's something you're wrestling with. But there's a lot of opportunities. there's a lot of talent. And Mike, we've talked about John David Baker when they were at East Carolina last season. They love to push the ball downfield. So there's going to be some big plays from Chambliss to somebody in this offense many times next year.
Well, speaking of pushing the ball down the field, that's what we hope to see, Stephen. Finally, from Big Blue. I know they're devastated. There's probably not a Kentucky fan in here because they're staying off the internet probably for 48 hours after their team completely crapped the bed there in the tournament. But, hey, for any crazed football fans out there, Stephen, who will be their breakout player year one of the Will Stein era?
Mike, on a happier note, the ending of the Santa Clara game was pretty fun, wasn't it? That was chaotic.
The all-time classic that'll be forgotten, lost to the sands of time after that, you know?
Right. Hey, at least they had that one shining moment, that right? It wasn't like one and done. You at least got the second game. So maybe that if, you know, the optimism of, I guess, winning one game, maybe better things ahead in 2026, maybe that carries over to what Will Stein's got going on, because I'm really intrigued by this offense. I think there's a lot of interesting pieces. I'm not there on sort of the high end, top 25, like sleeper team that some people are. But that being said, Mike, Mykel Skinner is a player that I've got my eye on. He's a redshirt freshman. I know I'm digging really deep here, but let's go back to Oregon for a second here. Kenyon Sadiq thrived in this role, kind of like a bigger wide receiver tight end, like H-back, a kind of split out tight end. Like, there's a lot of things I think that Will Stein's going to do offensively that was way different than the last coaching staff. If Skinner is used in that same role, he's going to play. He's going to catch a lot of passes this year, and he's going to be a big play weapon, kind of a flex tight end. So I know this is digging deep, but I think the offense sets up for somebody in this role to carve out a really nice season. And I like what I saw from him from in high school, what you've heard behind the scenes. Feels like he could be a really nice player for them this year.
Yeah, I think Kentucky fans, I don't even know if they know the tight end position exists under old Mark Stoops. So yeah, this could be not just a breakout player, but a breakout position for old Big Blue. So yeah, I mean, the game's changing on the bluegrass up there, and man, I can't wait to see how it all unfolds, because if nothing else, I think it's going to be exciting and it's going to be a lot more entertaining to watch the Wildcats take the field this fall.
I do too. Mike, I think just from a off-season intrigue, I think we have no idea what to expect from this team. They're certainly a very high on the list of intriguing teams. It was kind of hard to say that under Stoops because you knew what to expect, right? They were just going to play good defense. They were going to run the ball. There was the big blue wall. They're probably going to have questionable quarterback play. And this year, it's like there's a lot of optimism just because Kenny Minchie's has a lot of talent. You see what they've done in the portal and the offensive line and through some of the skill talent. And plus a coach in Will Stein that's got a track record of building high-powered offenses. So it's a way different way of winning, and it's a way different style of play. And I think it's going to be fun to, if nothing else, I think it'll be fun to watch this year.
All right, last but not least here, Stephen, Vanderbilt Commodores. Who will be the breakout player for Clark Lee and company?
Mike, I think this one is pretty obvious, but I would love to know what you think. I'm going Jared Curtis. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, when he, anybody that missed it, the first presser of spring for Clark Lee, it was, I believe the first four questions of like the 10 questions answered were Jared Curtis, how's he fitting in? How soon is he going to be named starting quarterback? Has he already looked the part? So yeah, it's the Jared Curtis show from here on out, I think.
Yeah, no pressure, right? Replacing Diego Pavia, Heisman finalist, nearly led Vanderbilt to the college football playoff. You're a five-star true freshman. Like, the expectations are just going to be out of this world this season. But also, I think with Tim Beck and Clark Lee and Jerry Kill, that brain trust at Vanderbilt will put him in a good position. Set Alexander's back. You know, they got some work to do in the offensive line. But there's a real chance that it's going to take him some time, I think, to become that five-star player. There's going to be ups and downs. But, man, much like Kentucky, this is going to be fun to watch just to see how he develops as a true freshman this year.
Yeah. Well, all right, Steven. So we have went. We're gone, I guess. I should know how to speak English at this point. Nearly 90 minutes talking SEC football here in the middle of March Madness. Any closing thoughts before we wrap this one up?
I wanted to pose a question because I'm curious. Because I, by the way, I loved your interview on Feinbaum. I thought you had a lot of great memorable moments on that show, but Friday's two segments were pretty awesome. So kudos to you. I am curious, you know, you talked about Texas and Georgia earlier. What's caught your biggest hesitation for buying into Texas this year? Is it just the way that the last year went, which is being so disappointing?
Well, I've never been a believer in Steve Sarkisian. We could start there. And the offense regressing year after year after year, that seems to be troubling. I was told that the offensive line wouldn't be a problem last year. And wouldn't you know it? I mean, it was a huge problem. Now they have reinforced that. So, you know, perhaps they'll get better there. I'm not a believer in Will Muschamp. Maybe that makes it sound like I hate the guy, but I don't understand the reputation he gets for like some elite defensive guru. Aside from he was at Georgia a couple years when they had, I think their second team probably could have started anywhere in the SEC. You know what I mean? And again, I attribute that more to Kirby and Glenn Schumann, who were there from the beginning all the way to the end. They didn't just drop in for 2 years. And I don't think any Georgia drop off is because Muschamp's not calling the plays anymore. I think that's ridiculous. But all those reasons. And again, Texas will win probably a minimum of 9 games next year. So again, I'm picking apart what is allegedly an elite team. I don't think they're elite. And also the strategy of, and this is, you know, their own strategy. They've kind of admitted this. Instead of wanting depth, they're going frontline elite. Is that going to work in a 9-game SEC schedule with Ohio State, with an expanded playoff? I don't. Good luck. I don't think that's the method I would take.
So do you think pre-spring, I guess pre-spring, some places it's not, Georgia tier one SEC, and then there's a lot of questions after that.
Yeah, I think Georgia's kind of in a class of their own right now.
I think, and it's kind of, we're kind of getting at it here, is I think whichever team can solve the offensive line is probably going to win the national title this year. Because I think we saw last year with Miami, you know, Indiana, like offensive lines are really like in flux everywhere with transfers and everything, and the play is so up and down. You know, I think which, like, whether it's Georgia with some of the questions, you know, Texas, I think LSU with all the new pieces too, how fast that group comes together. We talked about Auburn, like how fast Alex Golish can get this going. I mean, if you want to make a list of questions in the conference, a lot of them go back to offensive line, Texas A&M, Oklahoma. So it's almost like, for as much as, you know, Gunner and Arch and Sam Levitt, it's like these offensive lines are, whichever one you feel really good about is probably going to end up carrying the, your prediction and a team to the SEC championship and maybe the national championship.
Mm-hmm. And I will share this. I don't think he'll mind, but do you remember the great, I always loved this guy, Danny Sheridan, for years and years, USA Today. So he reached out after I went on Feinbaum the other day, and he said, I 100% agree with you on Sarkisian. And he said, he'll always be the guy that completely shit the bed on that Ohio State goal line situation where they couldn't score. Hell, that team should have probably done something. But I'm even more disturbed with them losing to Washington and Kalen DeBoering. I think that was even a worse loss. But again, that he's not elite. I think he is a very, very overrated head coach.
Sark.
Yes.
I think this is, I mean, there's all, I wouldn't say like, this is not exclusive to this. It's like, there's always one or two surprises in the coaching carousel. And I don't know whether where it's going to be, but it's all, you do wonder, like, at some of these places, like a Texas or somewhere else, like, if they don't meet expectations, what happens? It does feel like, given the talent that Texas is bringing back, it is really critical to meet those expectations, like, absent some, like, a lot of injuries. If you go 8-4 again, even in a very difficult schedule, Arch is going to be playing for the Jets or the Dolphins in 2027. You're starting over in the portal era. That's a little different, but it feels like they better maximize this window, or the questions are going to get rather large from here.
Everything's bigger in Texas, Stephen. Even the excuses, as I like to say. So
even the offensive line questions is scary.
All right, so hey, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Before we go, Stephen, as always, can you remind the cousins how to follow you and how to find all your work?
Absolutely, Mike. AthlonSports.com. We're hard at work on the magazine, but churning out some spring practice stuff. You can follow me over on Twitter at AthlonSteven, Stephen L. CFB, over on Facebook and Instagram too.
All right, Stephen, we appreciate you. We appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out here in the middle of March talking college football. We love you, you crazy sickos. We'll see you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.